What does Ben think of that? Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett, and we're a proud member of the Dialogue Podcast Network, a collective of independent, interesting podcasts who promote thoughtful, respectful, and engaging inquiry and discussion of all aspects of the LDS tradition, thought, arts, and culture. Find out more at dialoguejournal.com/podcastnetwork. That's all one word, dialoguejournal.com/podcastnetwork. The LDS Church has a specific policy for dealing with converts from polygamous groups. They have to get special permission to be baptized. Why is it that polygamists are such a threat to LDS Church leaders? I asked that question to David Patrick and Benjamin Schaefer of Christ Church, and they have a very interesting answer. Check out our conversation. Hey, I just wanted to mention one more thing. The Mormon News Report podcast is an awesome podcast, and they cover the week in Mormon news with a healthy dose of snark and commentary. Join Brant and Jenny every Monday to get caught up on all those news stories that you can stay up to date on the latest Mormon news. So check out Mormon News Report. It's a great podcast. Brant and Jenny are great friends. Now back to our conversation. So, and I know, Ben, you made a statement that I thought was... I'm just going to say shocking, that the Adam God doctrine can be summed up in a primary song.
Yes, actually. I firmly believe that, because this is at the heart of Mormon doctrine, that I am a child of God. The entire point of that song is to explain and give a testimony of the Adam God doctrine. Now, I recognize that that might sound shocking to some.
Exactly. I'm sure I just lost a lot of listeners there.
Right? Because the Adam God doctrine, they think it's complicated. They think it's about all of this deep debate about Scripture and all these different obscure quotes. But the Adam God doctrine at its core is really just this question of, who are we? Are we the children of God? Is this real? And this is also why it's a uniquely Mormon song. So let's just go over what it says, because I think each line explains one of these attributes. It starts with the basic declaration, I am a child of God. But then it goes into the Adam God doctrine by explaining how that happened. It says, he has sent me here. Now, how did he send us here? Next part is by giving us an earthly home. So God is my father. He created the earth. And how did I get onto that earth? Through my parents, kind and dear. So God the Father is our ancestor. He's the creator. And we are his offspring. Is essentially the same as the declarations of the first part of that song. And then we ask him what? To lead us, guide us, and walk beside us. So again, we're not putting God on that pedestal that he's this faraway being outside the universe, outside of time, who created us merely as created beings. He's to lead us and guide us and walk beside us on the earth. Just as Adam, he didn't just create the earth and say, oh, that's going to be a mess. Good luck, guys. Right? He came down here just as Jesus Christ did, to walk beside us, to take upon himself all of the pains and sicknesses of his people, to experience what we experience, and to teach us all that we must do so that we can live with him someday. And that's really what the temple ceremony is all about, that God created the earth for us, gave birth to us, walked with us, and is going to lead us back so that we can also pass those angels who stand as sentinel and live with him again someday. That's the core of it. And I would posit that any Mormon who actually believes that they are a child of God believes the Adam God doctrine, whether they call it that or not. Because that's the essentials, is knowing that we are actually the children of God. The other stuff's the details.
See, now, let me push back a little bit on that, because I know President Kimball, that was one of his favorite songs.
And he's also the one who said he didn't like the Adam God theory.
Exactly. You knew exactly where I was going there.
Well,
so how do we reconcile that?
We do consider the Adam God doctrine a gateway doctrine. So... people that do
like
start
marijuana is a gateway drug. Is that it?
Well, yeah, that's right. If you can take this Adam God doctrine stuff seriously, then that'll lead you into Mormon fundamentalism, essentially.
Well, and that's what I've heard before. You know, we had the exclusion policy
The November 5th.
The November, one. Yeah, November 2015. Exclusion policy, which the initial justifications were, well, that's the same policy we have with polygamists. You can't, because the LDS Church has a huge concern. And in fact, I will just mention this yesterday. I went to a Sunstone presentation, and there were all these women that were there and why they had decided to join polygamy, which I'm going to give you my bias here. It just kind of blows my mind. One wife is plenty. Anyway, you know, all these people, all these women got up, I was raised in seminary, I got married in the LDS temple, and then I became a polygamist. So the church has a huge concern with this, and so they've implemented this policy, and then when the gay policy came, they were like, well, we've been doing with this with polygamists for years, what's the problem? And I was like, I don't like this policy, and I don't like it against polygamists either, but I do understand the concern, because it does seem like, especially here in Utah, you know, they don't want you guys infiltrating our church and then taking people away. But I think it also happens that we take away some of your church members and that don't sure. like polygamy. So to me, it goes mm-hmm. both ways. But we're more concerned about our people leaving than your people joining.
So I do have a couple of things to say about this. Okay, so first of all, I do want to point out that I'm rather disappointed that when they did reverse the November policy for the children of same-sex parents, mm-hmm. that they did not change it for anybody who descends from polygamists. So I was hoping, if you're going to reverse it, wouldn't it be nice if they just had thrown out the whole mass?
But I wish
they've kept
have.
It for us, I'm afraid.
But that's funny that you would say that, because you don't want people joining our church, do you?
Well, I mean,
or is there a secret
we don't
thing?
Necessarily want people leaving our church, sure. But at the same time, I do have a slightly different perspective, and that is, this isn't for everybody. I invite anyone who's of Israelite blood and truly wants to live all of the Lord's commandments, receive all of His ordinances, to come into Christ's church, of course. But I also recognize that we're not out here to baptize the entire world. Not everybody wants to receive all the ordinances. Not everyone wants to live all of these doctrines. The United Order, consecration, that's not easy. That's not for the faint of heart. Plural marriage, definitely not for the faint of heart. You know, I know that people give us men a harder time because they think that we benefit from it, but it's a big sacrifice for men to enter into plural marriage as well. It's difficult, and so there's no point in sugarcoating that. But you also talk to this problem where the mainstream LDS church views us as a threat, and I suppose that is sort of true. To be fair, we do offer kind of the only real existential threat to their authority that exists, because if you have a testimony of the Book of Mormon, if you have a testimony of the Prophet Joseph Smith, they want to be the exclusive outlet for that testimony. And we offer that alternative that says, if you believe in these things fully and you want to do all of them, then here we are saying, we come to our temples where you can receive the full endowment instead of the cut-down version. And I think they view that as far more threatening than, say, the Baptist churches.
Exactly.
Or something like that, where the Baptist churches seem to have less than the mainstream LDS church. And we're like, oh, the other church is great as far as it goes, but we have more.
Yeah,
that kind of claim causes a lot of heartburn.
You guys talk our language, but the Baptists don't talk our language, and so it's easy to blow them off and be like, mm-hmm. I mean, I know there are people who join the Baptist Church or the Catholic Church or whatever, but yeah, I mean, I would agree. We speak the same language.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you are right. A bigger threat.
And so, you know, policies like that, I suppose, are a way of trying to make sure that they're not just setting up a pipeline that leads directly into our temples. They want to keep members in their temples.
Because we've heard, and I don't know how true this is, and I know that you don't speak for all fundamentalists either, but we've heard that I want to say it's the Apostolic United Brethren, but I might be wrong on that. That they will say, "Well, go get your LDS temple endowment, and then come join us." Are you familiar with that reasoning?
Yes. Well, more than 40 years ago, that was kind of the primary program for... I should say, not the primary program. That was the essential viewpoint of almost all Mormon fundamentalists. There was about a 50-year stretch from John and Lauren Woolley, early 1900s, through Reuelen Allred, where we also kind of believed that that was the program. That there, as David explained, that there were keys outside the church and there were keys inside the church. We believe in Christ Church. We've now rejoined all those keys into one organization. But during that time period, that 50 years, there was the idea that if you wanted to receive certain blessings and certain ordinances or complete those things, you had to go to the fundamentalists, but that you started in the church first. So, for example, Reuelen Allred did not build a temple. He didn't believe it was necessary because the mainstream LDS temples were still viewed as authoritative sources to receive that ordinance.
And Reuelen Allred was the leader of the Apostolic United Brethren.
Right.
Yeah. And so Joseph Musser and Reuelen Allred, which were the founders of the AUB, they said exactly that. They told their people, oh, well, you know, you should definitely, of course you should come to us, but don't join the AUB and do these higher things until you've done the earlier things. You'd be skipping a step. So they really only accepted members. They weren't a whole church, right?
So they were
an appendage
people.
To the church,
they were
as far as they were concerned.
They were following people to the LDS church and then saying, okay, get this all done, and then...
Right.
We'll give you the graduate degree.
So excluding children was exactly the church's response to the AUB policy of saying, oh, we're an auxiliary to the church, essentially. So you want all your children to be members of the mainstream LDS church, and you want them to go on missions, and you want them to go to the temple, get married in the temple, and all that sort of thing, and then become part of our priesthood group. That's to complete their gospel training. But they view themselves, like I said, only as that auxiliary, just as a capstone to everything the church was already doing. And so their view was that the church was meant to be a pipeline that led.
And in all fairness, that may not be their view today.
Right. I'm not sure that that's their view today.
I need to get Cody Brown on. Cody, if you're listening. So, I mean, it does sound like you guys are a threat then. Is that a fair statement?
I suppose. But I guess the point is, of course, is that we are just trying to be loving disciples of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. We are just trying to preach the fullness of the gospel. We're not... So a threat is kind of a harsh word.
I know.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe that wasn't what I was going to say.
I think we're an opportunity to gain the blessings that were promised.
I guess I can kind of... Even though I will tell you, I don't personally agree with that policy... That still affects you guys, but I can understand a little bit, even maybe a little bit better, why they have the policy in place. I still don't like it.
But yes, but I can see why they thought it was necessary as well, even though I don't like it.
Yeah. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Benjamin Schaefer and David Patrick of Christ Church. In our next conversation, we'll talk about the common Mormon phrase, "Families can be together forever." What does Ben think of that?
Right. So we believe that families are forever. But I view this statement that families can be together forever as essentially one of the most vile and apostate teachings that has ever been perpetuated upon the Latter-day Saints.
You just offended all my LDS listeners.
I'm so sorry.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available in either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.